Strategic Hot Box with Dr. Brandi Love Stankovic, discussing leadership, business, and how to take control of your life and achieve greatness. From the streets of Las Vegas, energized, informed, and never diluted, it's time to kick some ass.
Welcome back to the Strategic Hot Box. It's your girl, Dr. Brandi Stankovic, and we have a new first. It's time. We have our first returning guest ever. Welcome back.
It is so great to be back again.
I can't even believe it. You know, when someone kicks ass, they just kick ass. And we had to have Laura Gassner-Otting back with us today. So thank you very much for being here.
Well, it was so much fun the first time. How could I not come back?
Yeah, it's like we just drew her back into our magic. So let's go ahead and get started. As you know, here on the Hot Box, we learn, we love, and we kick some ass. And we're going to do that again for you today. And we have our first ever returning guest, and she's been busy. She's been out in the world making things happen. She's been writing books, traveling, and speaking, and we can't wait to hear more about her new book, Limitless, and she's going to tell us all about it. And last time we discussed getting unstuck, and we answered some questions from all of you out there, and we talked about, from the viewer's perspective, we did a little live coaching, gave some moments of here are some strategies that you might be able to get unstuck. And so we're going to dig into a little bit of that today and talk a little bit about Limitless. And it's how to ignore everybody, carve your own path, and live your best life. If there's ever a sexy title, that is it. I tell you, that's certainly something that I'm striving for all the time. And I know many of the people that are listening to Hot Box want the same thing as well. As you know, the ones that are listening and watching and those pioneers of the Hot Box that have been with us from the beginning, my passion, my purpose on this planet is to energize results. It's to help people. I want to give people the chance to be the best versions of themselves. And so maybe in some ways that's motivation. Maybe that's love. Maybe that's tools. Or maybe that's the stank face that they deserve to just stop doing the bullshit that they're doing and start being the better person that they should be, and being more in control of what they should be accomplishing. And Laura brings a very similar mentality and focus and mind space to the table, and believing that you have to do something in order to take action. You've got to take action in order to make things happen. And Limitless really is providing a tangible way in order to do that. And recently she was celebrity status in life, but certainly recently on the Today Show, we want to share a bit of that with you in the stories that she got to share on that stage. Scott?
And you're thinking, like, what's the cure? Like, how do I escape from this? What's your kind of general answer to that?
Well, we get stuck in these ruts because we spent all this time looking at everybody else and saying, I'll be happy when this person tells me I'm great, and when that person likes my post, when I get this promotion, or when my kids tell me, good job, Mom.
Right. Yeah.
And we spent all this time deciding who we should be and what we should be and what success means by the way everybody else around us defines it. And we put all those rocks in our backpack and we put them on and we run faster and faster on the hamster wheel. And then we wake up and we're like, why am I so heavy? Why can't I move?
Right. Why am
we're
I unhappy?
Stuck.
Yeah.
It's so funny because you are a motivational speaker. People think you have it all together, and you do.
Yeah.
But you say that you found yourself stuck in these moments.
Yeah.
Talk to us. Give us an example.
When I started my last company when my son was, my oldest son was 6 weeks old, and it was a part-time thing. I mean, that's crazy, right? Like, go big or go home. And it was part-time. I worked out of my house, and I thought I had it all. It was like, I could be a worker.
Yeah.
I could be a mom. I could be everything to all people. I could lean in.
Yeah.
Part of my life. And then what I discovered was the worker friends of mine saw me as a mom, and the mom friends of mine saw me as a worker.
Oh,
and I actually wasn't in either camp because both parts of me were fighting against each other. And I wasn't in consonance. I wasn't in alignment. I wasn't in flow. So all of my energy was spent code shifting back and forth between, am I this person?
Yeah.
Am I that person? And who am I? Because I'm still defining myself by everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Right,
so,
right.
So what's the end? Like, how are we getting
out?
We're all in the rut with you. Now, how do we get out?
Yeah, so I think one of the most important things to do is to start ignoring everybody else around you and to stop saying, that person defines success this way, that person defines success that way. But how do I define it for myself? The best advice I ever got was, you're just not that important.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
And at the time, I was building my business. I was building my community. I was building my family. And I felt I felt really important to every single person. And what I realized was that every time I said yes to the sucker punch bake sale chairmanship of an ass that we've all said yes to, right? We've all been there. We're like, I'd love to.
Yeah.
No, really don't.
So say no.
So if you learn to say no, but really even better, if you learn to say yes to the things that actually really matter to you, then saying no is actually pretty easy because there's not enough space in your life to say yes to those things anymore.
One of the other tips you have is to screw the Joneses.
I like that.
I'm like, so what does that mean? That means just to not worry about the perfection?
Yeah, it means to just stop judging your bloopers by everybody else's highlight reel.
Yeah.
So we're all on social media and we're all looking at how we've aged, in the last 10 years and all of this that you just talked about. And we're comparing ourselves. We're so busy comparing ourselves to everyone else and defining ourselves by everybody else's definitions and holding on to the way they think about us. My fourth grade teacher told me that I was going to be really, really, really good at being a lawyer because apparently I was super argumentative.
Yeah. In fourth grade.
Yeah. And so I spent my entire academic career trying to get to law school and figure that out. And then I got to law school and I hated it.
Yeah.
And I dropped out and I had a completely different path. But if I was listening to everyone else and I was listening to the Joneses and what they say I should do,
you
I never would have been happy.
You do have to in yourself and your own choices despite what everybody else is doing is the best thing.
Yes. Right. And how do we get to confidence? We get there by having competence. So you think, I could dream that I could be the Queen of England all day long.
Yeah. Right.
Nobody's bringing me tea and crumpets at 3 p.m. Yeah. I mean, I've tried. Right. But how do you do big things?
Yeah.
How do you change what you're doing? How do you get to that dream? It's not by saying, I can do this big thing. It's by starting to do the
baby steps all the way.
The best antidote to a rut is action.
Yeah.
Some sort
of
step.
Do something.
Get off the couch and go.
Yes. Yeah. So you take one step and the next step and the next step. And suddenly you're like, I'm showing competence in this thing. And now I feel confidence in that dream.
Awesome.
Laura, thank you so much.
And one thing that's really interesting in the way that they interview is they're so involved in answering your own questions and talking through everything with you. It's so cool and how engaged they are. And I love the quote that you said in judging bloopers through everyone else's highlight reel. I wrote it down. I believe in that is so amazing. But before we dive into this, I really want to take a step back and I'm going to focus my energy here for anybody that's watching. If you missed the last episode, Laura deserves a more formal introduction. So if you'd missed the last one, you need to go back and check it out first. But secondly, I want to formally introduce you to Laura Gassner-Odding. She is an author. She is also a motivational keynote and TEDx speaker. She is a confidence catalyst. And she also has her bachelor's in government and a master's in political management. She's been a presidential appointee in the Clinton administration. She's a nonprofit guru. She is inspiring people everywhere and now out with her new book, Limitless. And so, Laura, now formally introduced. Hello. So glad that you're back here with us. So tell us a little bit, how did the idea of the book come about? What does Limitless mean?
Well, I spent 20 years interviewing people who were really at the top of their game. The 15 of those years, I was the CEO of my company. So by the time people came to me, I knew they were qualified for the job. I didn't have to vet whether or not somebody had the subject matter expertise, but I could really figure out what made them tick, sort of who they were and why they were. And what I was fascinated by is that even though the thousands of people I interviewed were successful, they weren't all happy. Yeah. And I thought it was super interesting that success didn't always equal happiness. And when I sold that company to the people who helped me build it, I spent some time wondering, what am I going to do next? Who am I when I'm no longer Laura Gassner-Odding, CEO of this firm? And I had to figure out what made me happy. I couldn't just chase success again. And I had to figure out what made me happy. And that really started with saying, I can't define it by what makes everybody else happy. I'm not just going to keep checking boxes along someone else's path to someone else's version of success, but I have to figure out what I actually really want to do and then chase that down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you're so right in the fact that it's success doesn't necessarily equal like suddenly one day you're going to have this goal, you're going to check a box and like life is just going to get better and we're all just going to live happily ever after. Happily ever after is such baloney.
Well, it's baloney, and especially, there's always going to be somebody who has got a bigger car or a bigger boat or a bigger bank account than you, and it turns out that that person's teenagers are still giving them the same shade and the same eye rolling, just in a fancier car,
right?
But, we're all humans. They still put their pants on one leg at a time, and, it's just because they have more doesn't make them happier. In fact, there are lots of studies that show that those people are, in fact, less happy along the way.
That's true. And did you have a moment where you decided I need to get myself aligned, or have there been many moments, or?
You know, it's an interesting question. And I could tell you that absolutely I had a moment and I thought about it and I went to some guru on the top of a mountain and I had this intentional thing. But the truth is that if I look back, I can create a story, I can create a narrative that it makes total sense. But in reality, you know, it was like all kinds of crazy, you know, U-turns and left turns and right turns to get to where success is. So, you know, all those people that are like, oh, yeah, I knew exactly what I wanted and I went for it and I made it happen. Like, that's just, that's malarkey, right? That doesn't happen. Like, the most successful people are the people who fail the most often, right? They get knocked down, they pick themselves back up, they keep going. And so, no, I really didn't have a specific idea of what would make me limitless. But as I sat and I wrote the book and I interviewed people for the book and I reflected on the thousands of people I'd interviewed over the last 20 years, I realized that there was, in fact, a story that made sense and a narrative that made sense in a way that I could create a framework for other people to be a little bit more intentional about it than I was.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you share that, because so often we'll hear of these overnight successes or things, people were just in the right place at the right time. And I'm like, I'm ready. I'm ready, universe. You know, I'm having this conversation with you now. Like, but anything can fall in my lap at any point. I'd be cool with it.
Yeah. The question is, have you put in enough time to be the overnight success?
That's it.
Yeah. Right. You know, it takes 20 years to be an overnight success. I mean, the reason, you know, you see, you know, Serena Williams goes out and she kicks ass on the tennis court, but it's not because she goes to practice every day and hits a million perfect serves. She goes to practice every day and hits 99 terrible serves because she's testing, shifting her power, shifting her energy, you know, using a different kind of spin on the ball so that she knows when she gets on the court, she can be perfect. But the reason they call it practice is because it's not perfection. Right. So, you know, we all have to do the work in the dark that nobody sees. We have to sweat. We have to work our asses off in order to be that overnight success that looks so perfect out in public.
Is there a commonality or a thing that most people do that keeps them back?
I think it's comparing yourself to someone else. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like I talked about on the Today Show. We spend so much time comparing our blooper reels to other people's highlights that we think, well, it's so easy for them. So the minute that I get, the minute that I am not as successful, the minute that it's hard, the minute that I have a setback, you know, we take 10 or 20 minutes of a day where we maybe are thinking negatively, and then we assign the entire day to the garbage can. And the truth is, like, you have to keep getting up. I think, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is that I think follow your passion is the world's worst advice. Right. I mean, follow your passion is saying, like, as long as you find this thing that some flaxen haired crown, you know, flower crown wearing, you know, Instagram celebrity staring off into the distance is your passion. Go follow your passion. As soon as you find that, you're going to have ultimate bliss. And you're not, right? Like, the reason that something, the reason that, that you can develop grit and tenacity and get really expert at something is because you fall down and you pick yourself back up over and over and over. And you do it because it's your passion. But your passion is going to kick your butt. It's going to gut you. It's going to gut your bank account. But when you finally get it and you master it, then it becomes the thing that you do better than anyone else on the planet. And so, you know, taking those early setbacks and going, oh, well, I guess this just isn't for me. Well, I don't know. How much do you want it?
Right. And I think that sometimes searching for their passion ends up becoming this elusive thing that we never get to.
Or we define that it has to be this one thing, you know, so the thing that you were passionate about when you were, I don't know, in ninth grade or 10th grade or thinking about what you want to do for school and what you want to do for a career, suddenly you get partway through school and you take a really interesting elective and you go, oh, actually, I thought I was a science person, but really I'm a word person. Or I thought I was an art person, but really I'm a whatever person. Or maybe I'm not even interested in education. I want to do something completely different.
Right.
What happens is that we create an identity for ourselves, and it's an identity that other people have agreed is good. They've helped shaped it. You know, somewhere along the path, there is that fourth grade teacher, or there's that friend, or that teacher, or that mentor, parents, somebody who said something that honestly often is like a throwaway line. They didn't have a Ouija board or a crystal ball or anything, but they just made an offhand comment, and then we took it as identification. We took it as definitional to who we are. And then that shaped everything we did after, when in fact it really was just this sort of anecdotal idea balloon. And we brought it down to this place of honor, like right in the middle of our core. And we're like, that's who I am. And then we go through life and we find life partners and we have children and we have aging parents and we, you know, move and, you know, we have diagnoses and world disasters and things happen. And then we think we have to stay on that same path. And the truth is that at every age and at every life stage, your passion can change. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would you want to do the same thing for 85 years? That mm-hmm. doesn't sound very interesting to
and
me.
And almost impossible in today's world with the way businesses are changing and things. If you're doing something the same, you're in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, Blockbuster, does anybody rent movies from Blockbuster anymore? No, because we have a thing called the internet, right? So I had somebody on a podcast a couple of weeks ago say, well, what advice would you give your younger self? You know, if they were listening to this podcast today, and I would say, well, my younger self would say, what? I'm recording a podcast that people are going to listen to on their cell phones over the internet? None of those things existed. So, you know, what I would tell my younger self is explore and always like figure out who you are and be comfortable with the discomfort of not knowing all the time and write your plans in pencil, because you may know who you are, which you probably don't, but even if you do, the world around you is going to change at lightning pace. And if you stay in the same place with who you are, then you're limited by everybody else's idea of who you are and your one false definition that you clung to at a certain moment in time.
Yes. Yes. And so one thing that we've never done on the Hot Box that we chatted about potentially doing here, and maybe I have some nerves around it, maybe I, you know, it's just, but also a tremendous, the tables have turned, but it's also a tremendous opportunity because I don't get the chance to work with people like you in this frame often, and is to present you with some personal leadership challenges that I have, and then to get some advice from you directly. So
yes.
I can be the student in this moment. Yes. And so one of the things that So thank you for that first.
I'm so excited.
One of the things that struck me, a couple of things struck me in your today's show that you shared with us, but one of the things that did and that I feel, and I feel almost a weight for, is being held back by this vision of where I came from. Right. And it's this idea that I will work with different audiences or different groups or meet different individuals or people that will say, man, I wish life was so easy. On the way here, somebody was saying, oh, you're just so great at public speaking. Gosh, it's just so easy. And I think to myself in those moments, I take a couple different paths usually in those. One, I could get puffy chest like, oh, you don't know what it takes to practice. Like I'm going to prove, like, you don't know where I came from. Mm-hmm. Or I can just blow it off and let it go. But then I also feel then there's a disconnect of, because it's not actually that easy, but how do you prove it? Or, and the third is I can actually end up deprecating both externally by saying, I'm really not that good.
Mm.
Or actually thinking that to myself of, hey, you better not be that good in order to not, you know, turn off other people or that type of thing. And I'm finding myself getting to this place in some moments of it's holding me back. And it feels almost just very real. And it's become a limitation in a lot of ways.
So what do you do when somebody says that? What is your normal reaction?
It's one of those three. So depending on the audience and if I've had a cocktail or two, then, you know, it's typically, well, I will try in a place of being constructive to say, I'll relate it. I'll say, well, in your case, you're really great at this. And I know how much you put into that. So it's similar in the fact, you know, or whatever. But I do find in the case of if somebody relates it to a personal life thing, I find myself deprecating in places where there's not reason to, like, and then I'm like, did I just make up that this is shitty in my life? Like, dramatize, you know? So I don't know. I'm all over the place.
Yeah. So I think that we, and I think women especially, women, people of color, LGBTQ, anyone sort of in a protected class, we have this need to either apologize for ourselves or to take up less space or to make other people feel more comfortable, mm-hmm. right? By making, like, shifting the power dynamic and making them feel good. And I think there's a huge difference between being nice and being kind. Mm-hmm. So I think in all your knee-jerk reactions that you have, either I'm gonna, you know, tell them that I've worked really hard, or I'm gonna tell them it's not that big of a deal, or, you know, self-deprecate. That's you trying to be nice, mm-hmm. and just being like, well, you know, I've worked really hard, but, you know, great. Or you could do this too, yay you. Mm-hmm. I think being nice is this thing that we do where we don't want to upset the apple cart. We don't want to make people feel bad. We feel like it's our job to make them feel good all the time, even though they haven't actually told us that they feel bad. Like we feel like we need to be in this place where we're for them. And I think there's a difference between being nice and being kind. So you have built yourself in this career to a place where you are empowering other people. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for you to do that if your first reaction is, no, 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 it wasn't really that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. Imagine if what you did is you took that power that you have and you said, you know, I've worked really hard at trying to make it look easy. Mm. Thank you for that. And then they're like, oh, I see. I see grace. I see how hard she's worked. I now understand what it is. And you've given them a place to become a cheerleader for you. Mm-hmm. And you've given them an example. And so you have this kindness where you're able to bring power and hold on to your power without having to diminish yourself at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
How would that feel? Would that be a comfortable way to respond?
I love that. And that applies in both the personal and the professional realm to be able to say that that's great that it works and the fact that it doesn't seem that way. Yeah.
And I think social media makes it seem super easy for some people. Mm-hmm. You know, like you see, you know, I found it's interesting to me. I find that on social media, people want to applaud our successes, mm-hmm. but they really want to applaud the struggle that it takes to get to the success. And I don't mean like struggle, like, oh, life is terrible. My kids are sick. My husband's awful. My, you know, job sucks. Like,
but I came from nothing and look where I'm at.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they want to hear things like, you know, I got in my car today and I looked at the passenger seat and I had all this like weird athletic paraphernalia. And like, when did I become an athlete? Isn't that crazy? And the people who know me today think of me as a rower and a marathon runner and this like super athlete. And the truth is I was picked last every single time for every single team, every single year of, you know, all of my education. Like the fact that people call me an athlete today still makes me laugh. Like, I'm like, what, me? What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. But people who know me, who see me as this fully formed person right now, see me as an athlete. And mm-hmm. in my head, I'm still the like, what? No, that's mm-hmm. not me. But I think there are people in your life who see you and they think that you're something else when really all you are is just them 10 or 20 years ahead of them. You just have a head start. And so diminishing the time that you have spent and the work that you have put in, it not only is it a disservice to you, but it's a disservice to them and the work that they're going to have to put in.
Yeah. No, you're right. And what it takes to actually get to that place.
Yeah. So I would ask you, how can you use the struggle and the work and, you know, all the stuff that you do in the dark when nobody sees that, you know, getting up early and making it happen and all the homework and the pre-work and the post-work, how can you use that to help empower them so that they know what they're prepared for, to the work that they have to do and whether or not they really want to set that goal? And then how can you use that to also build your own platform so that you can do more and more of that for mm-hmm. other people?
And not get defensive or not feel like the need, be confident enough not to be defensive of that either.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's part of the key to it. And the other piece that really struck me in what you were talking about is the balance between mom life and work life. So I took my kids to mom bowling. It was mom son bowling night the other night. And I have completely removed myself from ever or just given in to the fact that I'm not going to be one of those moms. And I've kind of put in air quotes in the fact that I'm not good. I find much anxiety of going to mom-son bowling night. I wouldn't let my kids down, but I cannot stand going and being at mom-son bowling and being around other moms. Like I hate it because I'm not that mom. And that's me judging those other moms because I don't know them. But I'm so bad at that. Like I'll spend time with them, but then they run off and they leave me. And what am I supposed to do? Eat the cold pizza and sit there and chat? Like I don't have those skills. I don't have those skills. And so it ends up putting this weird. And so the point that you put out there for anybody else that has that is choosing a side is okay. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. And I think, you know, and it's funny because it this kind of dovetails a little bit with the first thing, because both of them are about your own identification.
Yes.
Right. So like, what if you did hang out with the moms and you talked about who the teachers are in the class and you know, who's taking oboe lessons after school and all the stuff that you're like, I want to shoot myself in the head. Like, it's just not that interesting. Like, I and the worst thing to me is when the moms get together and they complain about their spouses, their life partners. Right. And I'm like, are you like, if you're unhappy, change it. Like, fix it. Do something about it. Or they complain about their kids and you're sitting here, you know, we have the privilege to be going to, you know, mom-son bowling night. Like,
I had to change things around to be here.
Right. Like, the fact that we have the privilege to be able to change things around.
Right, right.
And you know, like, we wanted this life. You worked for this life. You made this happen.
Right.
Like, don't complain that it's a burden. Like, and if it is, then make some active changes to do something about it. But I think, you know, what if you just didn't have to show them that you were Dr. Brandy and that you had this career? And what if you just like had inane conversation for an evening?
Well, I try and I fail at those. So I never do talk about who I am, you know? And so then I end up not fitting in. And then I feel like I don't fit in. And so then, but because I'm not good at that. But then, then I almost feel like I should say what I do, but then I can't do that because then it doesn't fit in that way. So I found myself, we're just like separating where I just don't participate. So I, you know, it's a tough dynamic.
So what if you don't go to mother-son bowling?
Yeah.
What if you just didn't go? What if you did something else with, I mean, if the idea of mother-son bowling is bonding with your son and there you're there for a little bit and then they go off and bowl. I mean, it's not mother-mother bowling, right?
That's really what it is.
It's not mom group bowling. It's mother-son. Like those activities are often put together because the moms are bored, right? And they want other people to get together and complain to. So, you know, again, are you that important to the other moms?
I'm not.
No. And are they that important to you?
Not in the slightest.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah.
But you're that important to your son.
I am.
And he's that important to you.
Indeed.
So what if you took that time, where you have 168 hours in your week?
Right.
So I could easily say, whatever, you spent an hour at mother-son bowling, you hate it, it's terrible, move on, it's such a blip on your week. Or I could say, your time is super valuable. It is the one resource you can't make more of. You can make more money, you can go to the gym and make more health, you know, you can't make more time. What if you took that hour and you just did something that was just you and him, one-on-one? You put the phone in the trunk and you just, like, you guys went out for ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a better use of your time?
It would. That's beautiful.
And then you don't have to worry about the other moms.
No.
You don't need more. You don't, like, I don't need more friends.
Right.
Like, hashtag no new friends. Like, I'm already overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, I spend about 150,000 miles every year traveling around.
Wow.
And I am, for somebody who does, speaking for a living, ironically, I'm kind of an introvert. Like, and I like the one-on-one conversation. The one-on-one conversation is my favorite. So I'm able to go get on a stage, spend time having a one-on-one conversation, and then I go home and I nest with my family on the couch with my puppy, with my husband, and I don't talk to another human being. And people are like, oh, you must have so many millions of friends. And I have very good, close friends, my family, right? The family and the friends that kind of become your tribe. But I don't spend any extra time making any small talk with anybody who does not rise to the level of, is it worth my time?
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that you don't need those people in your life.
Right. And I think that the fairness in all of it and bringing it kind of full circle is the fact that they don't need me either, right? So that not that important. And so shout out if there are any of the mothers in mother-son bowling that are listening to the hot box today.
They are now relieved. They don't have to make small talk with
you
anymore.
They no longer have to talk to me. I get that. I've ruined that. I've closed that boundary. But they also are that plays a different role in their lives. And I respect and understand that. And they could be going through their own boundaries and have, you know, that plays different roles in everybody's lives. And so being comfortable in that and letting it go, whatever role it plays for different people.
Yeah. Everybody has different tribes that they bring into their life for different reasons. And, you know, they all may be listening to this right now going, oh, thank God, I don't have to go to that either anymore. I mean, you know, we have these expectations that we have to do all of these things. And that's what success means, that we have to check all these boxes and we have to show up in all these ways. And we don't necessarily get asked to do things because we're the most important or we're the right person. Sometimes we're just the closest proximate heartbeat and somebody, you know, asks you to do something and then you volunteer to do it. And the next thing you know, they're like, well, we should do this every week. And the next thing you know, you're like meeting for coffee every Wednesday you know, and you have no idea why? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the purpose of that? And why do people really care? Like, who are you and what matters to you? Like, what if in your life you're trying to put together a life that allows you to meet this calling, that allows you to do this thing that's bigger than you, then you have to make sure that what you're doing every day connects to that, that it actually matters. Like, why you in this box, in this organizational chart, at this moment actually matter? Does your work matter? And then are you building a life that contributes to that? So, you know, you've built this great life where you are doing this podcast, you've got your work, you've got your family, and it allows you a flexibility to be able to be there for people, to manifest the values you want into the world in a way that you want, but also have a lifestyle that you want that gives you this flexibility, and you have this great control over it. And so, you know, the basis of the book is for people to take those four C's of connection, contribution, calling and control, and really be able to build a life that works for them and not for anybody else. You know, mm-hmm. if your calling is curing cancer or, you know, saving the whales, great. But it also may be buying a Maserati and a beach house.
Right.
Nobody has any judgment on what calling is. And it may be that these other moms, their calling is to bond with the other moms and have this
Absolutely.
Network. And for you, it may be that you have so little time that for you, it's spending the time with your son. And mm-hmm. so it's just figuring out, there's no judgment on calling.
Right.
It may work for them. It may work for you, but it has to be your calling.
I believe that. And thank you for saying it so beautifully there at the end. And I need the book. I can feel my heart. My heart is open and I'm ready for the book. And so how could I go out and buy it today?
Yeah, so the book is available on Amazon.com, mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble, anywhere fine books are being sold. But if your readers are interested in figuring out what is limiting them, they can actually go to a quiz that I put together, which is about 60 questions. It takes about 10 minutes. It's at limitlessassessment.com. And they can see how much of the calling, connection, contribution, and control they have and how much they want in their life. And then they'll get some tips about how to do it.
I love that. And so as a bold action item, we'll do this together. Here's our top five kick-ass for today. So number one, believing there's no limit, right? So being as limitless as we possibly can. And number two is to get aligned. And I love that. And thank you for bringing it back for those moms that are out there. And because you're right, I think that the role of those types of events is important for some. And I don't want to disrespect that, but it isn't right for me. And I love the idea of letting it go because maybe I don't have to do that. And I should be okay with not forcing myself in those moments. So thank you. Number three, saying yes to what matters. You only have 168 hours, you said? I love that you know that at the top of your head.
Laura Vanderkam has a great book about how to make more time.
Uh-huh.
And she talks about the 168 hours is hers. But
love it. Say yes to what matters. Number four, defining your success. So it's not happiness and success. It don't always align. So knowing what that success is. And number five, in order to get out of that rut, you got to do something. It's time to take action. It's time to kick some ass.
It's time to kick some ass. And to remind you to do that, I have a little gift that I'm giving to the amazing women in my wolf pack who are helping me with the book, helping me launch it. So this is just a little reminder.
I love it. Where can I put it this way? It's a little limitless necklace for anybody that is listening. It's a beautiful gold limitless necklace from Laura. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. For everyone listening and watching today, get out there and check out Limitless by Laura Gassner-Odding. And thank you for being here and being a part of the Strategic Hot Box. We appreciate our first ever returning guest.
Super fun.
Thank you for opening my chest with a wrench. And now I'm going to just go cry in the corner and probably get abused at the next moment. Bowling night.
No, but you won't. The beauty of it is that you're not going. So
that's true.
You'll never get abused again.
Amen to that. Until we see you again, get out there and kick some ass.